And welcome back. This is Poetry in Motion. I'm your host, Tony Lontis, and joined shortly will be the wonderful, best-selling international author, Sony Singh. But before we get into the show, I want to remind you, if you're watching on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter, please reach out and say hi. And just a reminder that you can connect to us on all socials, including YouTube, which we'd love to have you live listening on YouTube each and every week to the shows that we put out. Replays of all these shows are available on Binge Networks USA, HeroGo TV, Zondra TV Networks, and the Tony TV channel app available on all Roku, LG, and Samsung smart TVs and phones across the planet. Each week, we do an important acknowledgement of the special and important role Indigenous communities play in the development of this country's cultural identity. So I want to respectfully acknowledge the people of the Yugambeh language region on the Gold Coast, Queensland, Australia, the traditional owners of the land in which we meet and broadcast, and pay my respects to elders past and present and all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening here today. Now, this is the last in our show series of Poetry in Motion with Sony Singh. And it has been an absolute delight to do this series with Sony and get to know lots and lots more about her and her writing and her gift of poetry, which she channels for the world to read. Now, Sony is a cross-cultural seeker of deep knowing. She writes stories of self-discovery to encourage people to accept themselves for who they are and live life on their own terms. Her tales of a character's definitive moments on their life journeys are both mystical and spiritual, and this is an integral part of her storytelling. Sony is of Indian descent, born in Mexico, raised in Colombia, residing in the US, and traveling in Australia right now at this moment. When she's not writing, journaling, reading, traveling, she indulges in meditation, yoga, and aromatherapy. She is an international best-selling author of the book called Lonely Dove. And also she has an amazing poetry series called Embody, Embrace, and Embolden. And today we get to talk about the last in her poetry series, the poetry book called Embolden. I would love you to jump onto Sony's website, sonysing.com, and check out all of her works, her blogs, and all the information on how to connect with Sony and where you can buy all of her amazing books. Sony, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope that we are able to stay connected because there's a downpour out here and I keep on getting unstable internet. So I'm sorry.
Sony's in Melbourne and she's got a ferocious storm in the background. So if we lose Sony, we will get her back, perhaps minus her video, but we're going to go ahead and get on with the show and hope that the storm doesn't impact Sony's internet. Now, as this is the last in our show series, I want to remind the audience again that Sony is now a best-selling Amazon author for Lonely Dove, and that's a phenomenal accomplishment for any author.
I feel so blessed.
and it should be celebrated because there's many, many, many books out there, but to get to Amazon bestseller in the US is a major milestone for our amazing author, Sony. And I know that there's only good things. Oh, there we are, back again. We can still hear you. So even if your screen freezes, we can still hear you.
Oh, okay, good. So I'll just continue talking.
Just continue talking. We'll worry about the screen later. Now, Sony, The next and third book in the series is a book called Embolden, and it's beautiful. Yep. The colors of Embolden, I think it's my favorite because blue is my favorite, but it's beautiful.
Yes.
And Embolden, and we're talking about it on the eve of its release as a paperback. So currently you can buy these beautiful poetry books. The whole series are in hardcover. And today Embolden releases as a paperback, which means that it's accessible for anyone to know, read, and love and purchase these books. Sonny, can you hold it up again? It's just a lovely book.
Can you see that?
Yes.
To have it.
Yeah, oh, it blends in with the background.
Yes. It does. It's the same tone of blue as the black screen.
I know. So Embolden, the poetry book, is where this channeling of poetry actually becomes very real for you, doesn't it?
It is, because, you know, the best way for me to describe it is Embody being the first book was a bit of a surprise, in that I had not expected to be a poet. I had not expected to write poetry. It sort of just came to me, and in a lot of ways, Embody, I had to sort of come to terms with what was happening, that I was kind of feeling the poems come through. Embrace was, which is the second book, Embrace was a little bit more kind of flowing. Now I was, you know, realizing or recognizing I am a poet. And for Embolden, I had embraced it. I mean, I accepted it. I said, okay, yes, I'm a poet. I know that this is something that I'm going to pursue more, and that I am going to be able to kind of bring into my writing in a conscious way. But still, it is hard for me to write a poem and just sit down and say, okay, I'm going to write a poem.
It's still channeled, isn't it?
Yeah, what happens with, and what happened mostly with Embolden, is just recognizing, okay, I have, you know, a spark of creativity at this moment. I'm going to honor it and go with it and write the poetry down, but just let it flow and accept that that's how it's going to be. Like, and for instance, days or even weeks without writing a poem, but once I get hit with a creativity or like that spark to write, then I write. Like, and it happened to me last night. I hadn't been writing for a few days, and then last night I wrote something like 10 poems just in one go. But it's almost like
amazing.
Once I open myself up to like, oh, poetry's coming, it just really flows.
So it is, Sonny, it is actually about recognizing that creative spark in that moment and giving it the time and energy to let it flow. Because if you didn't stop in that moment, the poems would still come, but they wouldn't come right at that moment, would they? So it for you, it was learning that you have to stop and write.
Right. And that's why a lot of times, one, I will travel with a notebook. And if I don't have a notebook, I'll look for pieces of paper where I can write things down.
Yeah.
Because that's just honoring that a poem came to me at that moment. It doesn't mean that, you know, there are times that, you know, I'm driving and a poem comes to me, or I'm in the shower and I'm like, I can't write a poem in that time. But at least I'll let sort of that little seed stay in there. And then the moment I have a chance, then I'll write it down. But the opposite isn't true. You know, if somebody says to me, you know, write a poem. Rose, I can't just write a poem about a rose.
Yeah. It's
I mean, I have to get myself in the right kind of space to be able to do that.
That's a beautiful creative process to share with the world, so that others that are listening, they might have creative moments, but they don't give it the space and the air to breathe. And that's part of what you've been telling us the whole way through this series, is you actually have to be aware, recognize, and then honor that gift. Because if you don't, there would be none of your beautiful poetry would ever come to life, would it?
Yeah. And you know, when I had written Embody and Embrace, we were still going through a lot of the COVID lockdowns.
Yeah.
You know, so I had a lot of time at home. So if something would come, It was easier for me to honor it with an golden and definitely with the poetry that I've continued writing since. I'm out and about. I'm doing things. I'm sort of back to living life. And so if a moment comes, the way that I honor it is I write it down wherever I can. So there are poems that I've written on brochures, that I've written on ticket stubs, that I've written on, you know, coasters, just because that's what I have around me. And that helps me kind of capture that inspiration in that moment.
Amazing. Amazing. So each of the series of poetry books have actually had a sort of a theme, and it's no different with Embolden, isn't it? So Embolden is more about the signs and the symbols and your communication with the universe. Do you want to talk us through that, Sony?
Yeah, so the thing with the process of the three books, their titles reflect even my journey at the time, but also my journey with poetry, in that Embody was very much what was happening internally with me, what I was experiencing, and a lot of that came out through different physicalities, even emotions in my this is happening, and I'm going to accept it. I know that I'm in a situation of flux because things don't necessarily last forever. And Embolden was now saying, okay, well, now that it's become a part of who I am, a part of me, how am I going to move forward with this? And with Embolden, a lot of the poetry in it, it has a lot of symbolism. I was looking at nature and signs and objects, and in a very odd way, sometimes I felt like they were talking to me, even though they weren't, but like they were a source of inspiration. And so it was Embolden is more about, okay, now that we've experienced all this, how is that going to now help me moving forward? But how is it going to all help us moving forward? And in, you know, noticing or not even noticing, just accepting that we're connected to everything. And that if we allow ourselves to see those connections, then we realize that everything that happens around us, whether it feels that way or not, is in support of us. I mean, sometimes they can be negative experiences or even positive experiences, but they're all supportive to our journey. So that's what Embolden is about, and all of the poetry in there is about that.
Sonia, can you tell us some of the things, some of the signs and symbols that were present for you when you were at this time? Can you talk us through some of those stories?
Yeah, so I looked at all at numbers. I like numerology, and we talked about when in Lonely Dove, there, like in the novel, I've incorporated it, but it also became very apparent here with this book. There's poems on dates, palindrome, which are, you know, when a date, or in fact even a word, can be read the same way backwards and forwards. Because that palindromes in general have a special significance. Like whenever we have a date that is a palindrome, usually there are opportunities for us to overcome or transcend certain emotions or certain things, events that are happening in our life. And so we start paying attention to that. Which I did for this book. Then you realize that, you know, emotionally or even physically, you go through experiences that are sort of connected to the larger workings of the universe. And so there's a lot of that. I also started connecting with maybe you can say certain figures or deities. And I realized that they would just come up. You know, I'd either see them in documentaries or see them in pictures, or people put up a post. And so when I started noticing that, then, you know, a poem would come and I would write about it. There's a lot of things. Even nature changing seasons.
I was gonna ask if there were any,
as we go through winter and things are sort of hibernating, then us also kind of being a little bit more inward bound, and then spring allowing things to flourish. So I do cover the changing of the seasons. Yeah. They tend to speak to me.
In talking about animals and nature, flowers and animals, are there any significant stories around those? I know talking to lots of other people, people have certain significance around animals. So for me, it's goats and owls. For my sister, it's cockatoos. For other people, it's blue butterflies. Are there any of those sorts of symbols that relate to you specifically, Sony?
Yeah, so for me, it's tigers.
Oh,
I have a big affinity with tigers.
yeah.
I have been told that my sort of earthly guide is a tiger. And
Oh,
so,
wow.
I've always felt a very strong connection. And in fact, there's poems in the book about tigers. There is for sure even an embody. I think I put one in there.
Because that is that affinity with tigers. And I'm going to keep talking because we might have lost Sony, and hopefully she won't be lost for too long. And here she is back again.
Oh, sorry. It just cut me off
It's okay.
completely.
Yep,
Sorry,
it's all
the
good.
storm has gotten particularly bad right now, so.
No. And we're talking about tigers, and for tigers can be ferocious, so there's a bit of an analogy there. What is it about the tiger, Sony? What is it? Tell me about that connection to the tiger.
I'm not sure that I know exactly what it's about, other than
Yeah.
any time that I am feeling a little lost or a little down,
Yes.
I will see tigers. And it's not, I don't see them physically because I don't
No,
near tigers, but there will be an image that comes up on TV, or I'll be walking and I see a billboard that has a tiger on it, things like that, or somebody will mention a story about a tiger.
Yeah.
And so that comes up a lot for me. I've recognized it. I mean, it has happened so
Yes.
many times that I know that it's not a coincidence.
And is it comforting? Is that
It
is
is
it a
very
comforting?
comforting. It is very comforting.
So there's
Yeah.
no
So for me, it's a
fear.
bit of like, okay, it in fact reminds me that I'm not, regardless of how I'm feeling, even if I'm not feeling my best in that moment, I am guided, I am protected, I am safe. And so for me, it's a reassurance that I'm not alone in this world.
Yeah.
Which, sometimes when you get in your head, you can make yourself believe that you are. But
Yes.
yeah,
Yes.
that is a reassurance for me.
Yeah. Does it also mean that you feel like you're on the right track?
I would say that happens more with numbers, actually.
Ah, cool.
So when 11/11, which a lot of people use as a sign of like,
Yes.
oh, make a wish. Well, there's a reason why it's make a wish, and that's essentially the universe saying to you, actually, you're on the right track. Or when you have consecutive numbers, so 1, 2, 3, 4, or even one,
Ah,
two, three, that's
yes.
another sign of you're on the right track. And I tend to see them. I mean, a lot of times you think like, oh, you just happened to look at the watch at the time that it was 11/11,
Yeah,
but when it
no,
happens to
it
you time after time after time,
constantly, yes, yeah.
then you realize that you can't always know to look at your watch when it's 11.
No, and it's also not a conscious thing either, is
So
it,
yeah,
Sonny? It's
it,
not
the numbers
conscious.
are more of an assurance for me than the tiger itself.
Are there any specific numbers? Like you talked about consecutive 1, 2, 3, 4. We talked about 11, 11. Are there other numbers that give you some outside confidence or cause you to pay attention in that moment?
So 3, 3, usually it's repeated numbers. So three, three,
Yes.
three. Three meaning trinities. A lot of
Yeah.
spiritual cults have trinities. Catholicism does,
Yes.
Hinduism does.
Yes.
And so when you have a trinity, it's sort of in a way saying the gods or the universe are with you. When
Ah.
it's four consecutive, like four, 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 it's the angels are with you. When it's
Cool.
5, 5, 5, it's usually change. It's a sign
Ah.
of change and transformation. And for instance, that is a theme in Embolden, Because the book is written in five sections, and I selected the number five because for me, Embolden and the poetry in here was okay. So now there is a shift in me. There's a shift in the world.
Yes, yes.
There's a chance for us to kind of know that there is a change coming and move forward in that change.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of times people think that change is not a positive thing, but change is constant. I mean, we are changing
all the time.
And so when I see the 555, I always look at it as a positive thing, because to me that means that I'm in a process of evolving.
Fantastic. And I love that it's the five is in Embolden as well, and it's in five segments, because that's powerful in terms of your poetry as well, isn't it?
It is, because the poetry that is in Embolden, I think it was, I wasn't conscious of this when I was writing it, but looking back on it and reflecting on it, it was very, in a way, emblematic of me just saying, I am a poet. And when I said, I am a poet, that in it of itself changed me. Because I went from a place of, this is happening to me, and
what
I
is
get,
this?
Getting poetry. To, okay, I am a poet and this is what I do. And that,
and that happened in Embolden, didn't it? In that time frame, that's when it sort of solidified and you went, I can actually do this. I am a poet. I am creating these verses and these poems, and it's being channeled to me. Did you think of it as a gift at that time, or you just acknowledged?
I still don't. It's really funny, because to me, it's just, it went from being an experience that I was going through that I sort of had to come to terms with to, oh, this is who I am.
See, that's just beautiful, Sony. Like, that's really beautiful. That is a true acceptance of what's happening in your life and where your soul is directing you to go, and you're going with that. That's a powerful thing, because not everyone recognizes that soul direction, do they, Sony? That there are many, many people out there that know. And whatever it is that holds them back, be it fear or whatever it is, they're stopped in that point, aren't they?
They are. And you know, talking to you, it just occurred to me, Embolden launched when you and I were at Crom Castle. And I don't know if you know this. Yeah. But
yes.
You know, every evening when we were at Crom Castle and we had all these writing retreats and activities and stuff, we would sit down on the fire and different people were reading poetry, including me.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That was the first time I ever read poetry in front of a group of people. And I don't know, I don't think I actually ever said that, but that was the first time I read poetry in front of a group of people. And to me, that was really transformative. I mean, it was a part of fully accepting that this is who I am.
Yeah.
So it's funny, just because as we were talking, I had that like, oh,
I had the same.
This
I'm like, I was
happening at the same time.
I know, because I was actually going to ask you about the wishing stone in Ireland. So we've actually had similar thought processes at the same time. And I'd forgotten that Embolden was launched in Ireland. Completely forgotten. But obviously, universe was prompting me talk about Ireland, because the wishing stone, you went and found the wishing stone, didn't you, Sony?
I did. There was a group of us, I think four or five. I don't remember at this point how many people there were. And we'd been told more or less there's a wishing stone out between, you know, the current castle.
Two trees.
Well, actually it was two trees, but it was, you know, the direction that we had is, it's between this path and where the
and
old castle that burnt down is. And you have to look in between these two trees. And we're sitting there thinking, where is this? We were also all thinking it was going to be this big stone. Like in my mind, that was going to be big and noticeable. And here we are, I remember like traipsing through grass.
Yes.
And
yes.
This tall, tall grass just to find this one stone. And I and it was actually in between two trees. It's just we were looking for two trees kind of like
Yeah.
this, and two trees were
Yes.
this way.
I was just going to say, and my relation to that as well was I was walking one morning or one afternoon, and so was Sony. We were walking in different directions, and I said to her, "I'm looking for the wishing stone." And she grabbed my hand and said, "Here it is." And I'm like, "Oh wow." And
It's
I
true.
was expecting big, like a big monument, but it's kind of
Small.
small and flat. So if the grass is overgrown, you're not going to see this wishing stone. But there's a very beautiful energy around that stone. And to sit there and just sit alone in that space was really it was a beautiful energy. Is that how you felt too? Because I know you went and sat there as well,
Oh, yeah.
Sony.
I went and sat a couple of times because I think the first time
Yeah.
around there were just so many of us.
People.
After we'd found it, there was like a long line of people. And then I think when you and I ran into each
Yeah.
other, I had just gone just to be
Yes.
by myself on it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I saw you and was like,
Yeah.
oh,
Is it? Oh, where is
walk up there. I
it,
did feel quite a lot of energy. To me, it felt like a
Yes.
very vibrant night. I mean, it was vibrating. I mean, you
Yes.
could, it was
Yes.
warm, it was vibrating. I
Yes.
felt like, I mean, just all sorts of crazy things happening. I even had a purple photo appear on my phone that I'd never taken. I mean, so many things happened with that stone. Yeah, at the time that I was taking the stone, so it was crazy.
Yes.
Just a
And
very interesting experience.
it was very interesting, and I agree with Sony. You could feel the ancient, almost like ancient wisdom I felt around that stone. And it must have been there for millennia, that stone.
We don't know. Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
that's the interesting thing that the Earl, had said that his mother would kind of come to the stone and sit there, and he knew that she intended to do that and wished upon it, which I don't know if that's the reason that it's called the wishing stone, but he himself said he didn't know how long it'd been there. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And a lot of the stuff on that land in particular is quite old, and quite ancient. So it could have been there for a very long time. And who
Yeah.
knows what happened in and around the stone in ancient times, for instance. It's
Yeah.
fascinating to be
Yeah.
in Ireland with all of that ancient history surrounding
Yes.
you and the castle and the castle ruins and all the stuff. It's a magical place. Sonny, we talked earlier in the earlier shows about the flute story and the flute poem. So I thought I'd get you to read the flute poem first and then tell us the story around it.
Okay, so flutes. If anybody's interested in it's in Emboldened, and it's
Yes.
on page 48 in case anybody has a book and wants to read it.
Yes.
So I'll read it first. Flutes. A woman plays a wooden flute. She has many in boxwood, cedar, cocobolo, and mopani. She plays twice a day at least. A unique frequency rolls out of her. She emits healing tunes, wakens the senses with ancient lore. Her melodies take us on journeys, like an eagle soaring through the sky. A deep spiritual perspective, keen eye, and a unique vision. Like a turtle that swims in solitary calmness, self-sufficient in the vast ocean, carrying its home for its eternal longevity. Sage collected in their travels. The eagle and turtle intersect in the flute, a rare happenstance of shared wisdom. When the woman plays, air, wood, and water combine. A dense canopy in the Catskills, moving zigzag around tree trunks, slow-paced with a sense of calm and peace. People wearing thick wool ponchos, looking down on the ruins of a village from the top of the Andean Mountains. A gust blowing that flops the hair while standing on a mesa in the Arizona Red Rock. Blue skies above while water trickles down a soft cascade as a river makes its way through Alaska. The ocean reveals a gentle ebb and flow with a light, soothing breeze from the Keys, as the sun shines in soft light. Open ears receive the healing without ever having to hear, all because of a woman who plays her soulful melodies where eagles and turtles meet through hand-carved wooden flutes.
Oh, thank you, Sony. As you're reading that poem, I'm getting the vision of the place that flute is being played. It's very powerful.
And so the interesting thing with that poem is that the first time I mentioned it was in embodying, was a poem that we read or that I read on the show. And at that point, the only thing I had mentioned was a line on a poem called Sparks that was about a woman playing flutes. And this woman is a friend of mine. She and I, during COVID, used to speak every Monday. She was on her own at the beginning of COVID. I was on my own. And she is a music teacher. And so she started playing flutes, and she had a collection of different ones. And so sometimes she'd play them for me during our calls. And at one point, I started noticing that there was something different in how the sound changed as she picked a different flute. And so one day in particular, we decided, okay, well, you know, she said to me, I'm going to send you healing music. And she said that she would do this for me even when I wasn't listening. That's why I met a line in there about, you know, you get the healing even if you don't hear it. But on this one particular call, she said, just close your eyes and just listen. You don't have to do anything. And she switched from, I think it was four or five different flutes. And all the things that appeared in this poem are visions that I had while she was playing. So she changed flutes. And it was almost like I was being transported, you know, from a beach in the Florida Keys to forests in Alaska to the mesas in Arizona. It was fascinating. I mean, it was just really, really impactful. And that was how this poem came about.
Do you know the types of material that the different flutes are made out of? Do you know the history of the flutes? Did she talk to you about that?
Well, I included them on here. I don't know which flute is which. Like, I wouldn't be able to tell you necessarily that, but it was boxwood, cedar, cocobolo, and mopani. That's what she told me. Yes. But I wouldn't be able to tell you which was which. You'd have to ask.
But they all had different tones, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. They all played in different frequencies, very different tones. Yeah. Something about, you know, one, the quality of the wood. I know that they were all handmade, but also the length of the
flute. That was my next question. Were they all handmade?
Yeah,
because
they
can actually be carved, or I think the word might be whittled out of wood as a complete whole. It's not like joined together. They're complete. Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you know how old they were, Sony?
I don't. I know that some of them she'd collected since she was a child, and others she'd gotten through different sellers, but I don't know how old.
Yeah. And has she always played the flute, Sony?
I know she plays different instruments. Her main instrument is the guitar, and that's what she teaches. But in that moment, as we were going through things, she was being drawn to the flute. And she was playing, I mean, she was studying this. It's not something that I know very well, but she was studying how different frequencies have different healing effects on the body.
I was just going to bring that up, and that we actually know that there's different frequencies that have different impacts on the body. So frequency is, I guess, I liken it to vibration. So it actually works at a cellular level in terms of healing or decreasing anxiety, working with depression. There's a whole range of things that those levels of music can help with. And it's interesting that at that time she was drawn to the flute at a time when you were both feeling quite isolated over COVID, and that the flute was being used in its healing capacity.
Well, and the thing is, when she started playing for me, she wanted me, the reason that she asked me to close my eyes was she wanted me to tell her if I felt an an impact on my body, if I felt it in different places. What was unexpected was the imagery that came as we, you know, as she was playing. And so what stayed with me were the visions that I was getting, and that's how the poem came about. But the intention of it for her to play it for me was healing.
Oh, amazing, amazing. Mm-hmm. And we know, Sonny, too, that flutes are, again, another ancient instrument, because they've been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So they're a beautiful instrument, and when they're played well, they are really lovely to listen to. Like they're lyrical, aren't they?
They are, and because it almost feels like without having lyrics, you're actually listening to listening to something that they're actually the words associated with it. It's quite impactful. They're quite beautiful.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that story with us, because you don't in normal conversation end up talking about flutes or their impact, but it's good to do that in terms of your poetry, because now you can see the progression of where the poem come from and how it came to be. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to read me another of your favorite poems from Embolden. And talk us through the writing and what you were thinking at that time after you've read it to us.
Okay. So I'm going to read Dream World, which is on page 170.
Yeah.
And so here we go. Dream World. I have recently had such strange dreams. I can't seem to explain. Distinguishing is hard. What is coming? Is it a sign? Is it a vision? Did I create it? Out of imagination, or did you send it, led by thy divine? The two mixed together, and I can't tell. What is made up? What is a message? What is a sign? What my brain is processing? What I am guiding? What is guiding me? I don't know what to make of it. Is it something or nothing? I simply let go, trying to control what I see. Making sense of it all, trying to decipher. I want to see what will come. I want to know. But maybe I don't. Maybe I shouldn't. Then where is it? The charm is within, in the unknown, the unexpected, the surprise. It can blow your mind, make your heart explore, because it is better than what you imagined, better than what you came to in those strange dreams.
Oh, thank you. So talk us through that one, Sony.
So this one was really kind of accepting for me that a lot of what I go through in meditations is very visual, but it's visual internally, not.
I know what you mean.
I watch meditations, meaning like things come in my mind's eye, as they say.
Yeah.
And that's how I, you know, like when you were asking me about the tiger, when I see tigers, I see them in my mind's eye. And a lot of times, you know, it was in this phase of trying to understand what is coming to me? Am I actually directing it, or am I not? And sort of coming to terms with, no, I actually do see things in my meditations. That is part of, in a way, how I interpret the world, how I connect with the world, and how I express things that eventually come out. Because for instance, coming back again to the flutes, she's playing music, but I'm seeing images in my head. And so it the reason that I chose this one is because it kind of helps bring everything together in accepting that I am connected with everything around me, and I'm embracing that connection and making that part of my journey and making that part of my life. That's that's my favorite poem.
I think it's lovely to actually see the progression from the start of the books and to Embolden, and see the change in the way you talk about each of the books and the progression of you as a human being. And Embolden is the best title for this book, because you You can hear in your story that you're now feeling emboldened to embrace this channeled poetry that comes to you, and you're feeling more comfortable and you're letting it flow, and it's delivering these beautiful poems for us to read and embrace ourselves. At the end of Embolden, did you think that that would be the end of it, or did you have some sense that it would continue?
I wasn't sure, to be honest. I mean, I thought that I would continue writing poetry. I didn't think, or I didn't necessarily know if I had it in me to write more books of poetry.
Yeah.
I started incorporating poetry a lot more in my other writing. So, for instance,
in your novels?
Yeah, in the novels. Mm. And, you know, for like I would put it up on my website, or, you know, the story that I did for The Colors of Me, which is also the anthology that your story is in.
Yes.
A lot of that poetry just flowed naturally as I was writing.
Yeah.
I think there's three or four poems in there. I don't remember exactly the number. And so I knew it was still going to be a part of my writing journey. I just didn't know in what capacity or what form. But I've surprised myself, because I have continued writing quite a lot of poetry. And, you know, what I said before, I can go for weeks or days without writing, and then, you know, in one go, I'll get a whole bunch. But I am actually working on a new collection of poetry books. So
I know, that's so exciting. Can you share with the audience, Thony, what's next in terms of poetry and the next series? Have you got an
so the
idea?
Next series, the bigger concept, and, you know, we're still working through a lot of the details.
Yes.
Is journeys.
Yes.
A lot of it, because I mean, my own personal journey, specifically in the last year or so that I have been searching for a home, a place that I want to settle in. That's, you know, so I have been traveling quite a lot. And some of it is whatever's come through those travels. A lot of the places that I've been have inspired poetry. And also, I have realized that I write a lot more poetry when I am sitting on an airplane or a train. I don't know what it is about sitting in one of those two, but a lot of poetry just tends to flow during that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of journeys is the kind of the name of the next collection. But it's going to be a few books of poetry. So.
And I remember you talking about the concept that you might make them smaller books. Because the current series of three are substantially beautiful and bigger books, beautifully illustrated and written. And you felt that this time it would be just about the poetry, that they would be smaller, the series of books would be smaller and more easily consumed, I guess.
Yeah, because the thing is, for instance, Embolden has exactly 100 poems, which is quite a lot for a poetry book. And each of the other ones, Embody and Embrace, have 97 and 98. So not quite 100, but in the collection,
that's a
there's
lot.
Already 300 poems if you have all three, which is pretty substantial. And so for the next one, I wanted to make them more bite-sized.
Yes.
At least half of the size in terms of the quantity of poems in each book, so that they're a lot, so they're more accessible. Just because, you know, I like for people to be able to carry these books and sort of just open to a page and read whatever inspires them. You'll notice with my books, there's no table of contents, and the reason is for that sometimes, I mean, you can read it in one sitting, you can, you know, read it maybe not necessarily in one sitting, but, you know, all sort of sequentially, but you can just pick up
and intuitively open the book and that'll be the poem that you get and read. So a little like an oracle card reading, but with poetry that will speak to your soul.
Sort of like a message for the day, if you will. And so they're quite beautiful books for that.
They are.
But I want the journeys and the new collection that I'm working on to just be, you know,
poetry.
Just
yes. Yes. Now, with the success of Lonely Dove comes a little bit of pressure for the next novel, but I already know you're working on that. So can you share something around the next novel or three?
You froze on me, so I didn't necessarily hear the question, but I think you're asking about the next, what I'm working on next in terms of novels.
Yes.
So I am currently working on another novel that I have finished the first draft for, and now I am piecing it together. And I think we also during the Show and Lonely Dove, we had this conversation about how I don't write the story from start to finish. I just write and then eventually put it together. And so I'm in that process of putting it together. So I have a piecemeal kind of story that now I'm trying to say, okay,
put
now that
together.
I've written this, what is really the story that I want to tell? So there will be another novel coming soon. After that, I do have other ideas for other novels, but I haven't started working on those yet.
Sunny, in talking about that process of writing, and it's different for each writer. So some writers do have a complete novel planned out in their head from A to B, what it's going to be. But for other writers, you write what you're feeling to write about in that moment, and you do that multiple times, and then you go back and kind of put it into some sort of order and construct so that it actually is a novel. And I'm wondering if it will get to the point where you... back again.
Yes.
I'm wondering if it will come... when you channel the poetry, it comes intuitively. And I'm wondering if that, now that you've had that experience with the poetry, I'm wondering if other novels will come to you in the same way.
It is possible. I mean, you know, the truth is a lot of times, especially when I'm working on the first draft, there will be a moment when I think of a scene and then I sit down and I write the scene, and I don't necessarily know where it's going to go in the book other than I'm just writing it. And I'm in the moment writing that portion. It's at this stage where I am with this second novel that I'm working on that I start kind of trying to figure out, okay, where does it make sense for me to include
this?
You know, is it truly channeled or is it not? I don't necessarily know. It could be, because sometimes I just come up with an idea and I have to get it out.
And you put it,
The difference, though, is with the novels, I can sit down and say, okay, it's time for me to sit down
write
and write a novel. And I can just sit down and write it. And also with poetry, you know, I have... it handwritten. Sometimes it's chicken scratch like that. Like that's right there.
And also, I think I remember you showing me a serviette with your notes on it.
Whereas with a book, I will sit down on my computer. Like it's on my laptop. I will sit down and I'll work on it. Even if I have a thought for a scene, I may just jot it down just so that I remember. But when I actually have to write it, I will physically sit down on my laptop and write it. Sorry.
Yeah. Fantastic. And the audience has to remember that the amount of work that Sony has produced, including the novel, the poetry, and the next round of poetry books and novels, there's only a short space of time. So this, we're talking about like 2 to 3 years, aren't we, Sony? Oh, and I've lost Sony again. No.
Sorry, seems to be in and out again.
I was going to say that those storms are starting to impact our internet, unfortunately, for the audience. I was just wondering about you've been so creative over such a short period of time. That must feel wonderful as an author to see the culmination at this point and see the success at this point and know that there are many decades to follow in this process.
But it has been a short time, but it's also been a big process for me terms of also accepting that as part of my journey, in the sense that I've wanted
Oh,
a child.
and
I didn't necessarily give myself the permission to do that. I followed different career paths, and it's almost like I had to go through that entire process to come
to
full
be that
circle and
this,
back to say, okay, well,
yes,
this is actually what I've always wanted to do. And I
wanted.
think part of the reason that it's in a way happened so naturally is because I accepted it. And, you know, we talked about essentially the tagline that I have, which is trust in your
Yes,
soul
solve.
destination. And that's because that's specifically the journey that I've been on as a writer. It was, the universe sending me signs, my soul kind of leading me into this whole, you know, writing has been a part of every single job that I've had, whether it's formal or informal, even from something as simple as training manuals, marketing material, website copy, you know, like all sorts of things that I always ended up writing. And it was through that, in fact, in the last job that I had as a wellness coach, that I started writing wellness related articles that, you know, once I opened up to doing regular writing and publishing things, that I embraced the fact that really what I wanted and what was kind of inside me was a storyteller. It was me accepting that I had a storyteller in me and that I had a creative outlet that I needed to follow. And my soul had been guiding me all along. I just needed to listen.
Yeah. And sometimes it takes something happening for you to actually stop and listen and go, okay, I think this is what's happening. The other thing is that sometimes we have to grow as a person and become more confident and self-accepting to be able to put your work out into the world, because it has both a physical, mental, and emotional toll is not the right word, but it has an impact on you. So you have to be at a certain level of maturity, understanding, and acceptance to go forth and put your work out to the world, because it's kind of scary, isn't it?
It is really scary, and it's it feels very vulnerable because you're putting yourself out there, you're putting your words out there. What I've always said is, for me, the poetry is very personal. It's very reflective of my view of the world, my experiences, how I see the world, whereas the novels are fictional. And so, sure, I'll draw from experience, but they're still created. But you're 100% right. Having lived through everything that I've lived through, I have all of that to draw from in order to create. I have that to draw from to put together a lot of the stories that I am able to. But I also have the confidence, I think, and the maturity now, doing it now, than had I been 20 years old trying to do this. It would have been very different. Plus, I fully accept that everything happens the way that it's meant to.
Absolutely.
And I know that I needed to go through that journey. I needed to go through all of the experiences and all of the background that I have in order to get myself into this moment.
So, you know, and sometimes when you're walking through those tough periods in life, you just think, what the heck? And sometimes it's not until afterwards that you go, oh, I understand.
Yes.
That happens in the journey of life.
There's a lot of beauty in a lot of the things that I was able to experience. And it's really comforting in a way to be able to sit at this point and look back and be able to connect the dots to say, okay, well, that happened. And because that place, and because that next thing, then I moved on to the next, and you know, one thing essentially led to another, and there's a beauty in all of that. So
and like steps on a path, you can't take this step, you can't jump over that to get to there, you've got it one step at a time. Sony, we are just about out of time, which I can't believe again. Before we completely run out of time, I want to give you the last word to the audience about where they connect with you, where they can buy your books, and how they can engage with your beautiful poetry.
Well, they can find me. The best place is my website.
Yes.
www.sonesing.com, and that's SoneeSing.com. That has links to everything, my social media. I've got Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I've got a blog on there. I update it once a month. There's a newsletter. There's also links where you can buy the books. I don't sell them myself, but I have links to all of my publisher site, Amazon, wherever else the books are available. So that is the best place to
fantastic.
You can even send me a message if you'd like. I'd love to.
I was just going to say, send. Sunny loves to hear your messages. She loves to hear how her poetry has made you feel, or if you've got questions about it, Sunny will be open to talking to you about any of her processes. And if you're sitting here listening and going, oh, I could never do that, then talk to Sunny because she's done exactly that. Yeah? Sunny Singh. Thank you so much. Poetry in Motion, this is our final show. I will have Sony back to talk to us from time to time because we're going to want to know what she does next. This is just the start for her. I encourage you to connect with Sony. Jump on, go out, buy her books. They're beautiful. They're great. Lonely Dove is fantastic and you can still buy it. It's still online. Go to Amazon and you'll find it. And Sony Singh, thank you so much for this series.
Thank you. It's been an honor to spend all this time with you. So thank you for having me.
My privilege, my privilege. That, my friends, is your lot for this week. Bye-bye for now.